Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I welcome author of You Are What You Do and Six Other Lies About Work, Life, and Love, Daniel M., to the show, and that is spelled I-M, by the way. And Daniel M. is a speaker and a leader who has traveled to cities like New York, Vancouver, Los Angeles, Sydney, and Seoul to teach, consult, and coach. He's got a podcast, and that podcast has been downloaded over 3 million times. He has pastored in 5 major cities around the world in churches ranging from 100 people to 50,000 people. He has also written 3 paradigm-shifting books, You Are What You Do, as I mentioned above, No Silver Bullets, 5 Small Shifts That Will Transform Your Ministry, and Planting Missional Churches, Your Guide to Starting Churches That Multiply, which is now in its second edition. Daniel has an MA in Global Leadership and is a Gallup Certified Strengths Performance Coach. In this episode of Your Partner in Success Radio, we're going to discuss the gig economy, which I'm fascinated with. So we have 4 or 5 points that we're going to cover. One is the rapid growth of the gig economy. The others are the intended consequences of the gig economy, how to thrive in the gig economy, and how the gig economy affects relationships, work, and life. Daniel, good morning, and welcome to the show. And by the way, thank you for sending your book to me. I have it here on my desk as we speak.
Oh, awesome. It's great to be with you, Denise.
It's going to be fun. Like I was mentioning in my virtual green room, the gig economy right now is very important. Very, very important. Mm-hmm. You can call them side hustles. You can call them finding a new way to pay your bills. You can call it whatever you like. But I think it's going to continue to be a big talking point across the world and grow. And I think you do as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's incredible to see just how rapidly the gig economy had grown. And when we talked a couple months ago initially, it was pre-pandemic. The gig economy, it was interesting to see how rapidly it was increasing. And initially, I was like, once the pandemic hit, I was wondering what this was going to do to the gig economy. But it seems like our economy is, or we're all surviving because of the gig economy, it seems, these days.
I agree with you. Listen, most people are resilient. They may not think they are. They may not recognize that they are. But when they have to get up in the morning and put food on the table, they find a way, most of us. Yeah, I mean, I think that's just how we are created as humans beings. We're going to do what we need to do. And this is a great time, in my opinion, to get inside your head and figure out what it is that you do, that you love, that you can share, what you can bring to other people that will actually help them and help you make a little bit of money at the same time, which could eventually become a full-time business. That's how most gigs start anyway. Eventually you just go, hey, this works. I'm going to make this my full-time thing. Mm-hmm. So if this, you know, nobody wants to have a pandemic, but this is a great time to say, what do I have in me? What can I share?
Yeah.
How can I make money? How can I help other people?
Yeah, you're completely right. And it's interesting because when you look at all the research out there on the gig economy, you need to distinguish it from the sharing economy and from, another word for the gig economy is the freelance economy. And there's a lot of, and the experience economy, and there's a lot of different ways. And then you have, in university, I don't know if you did macroeconomics and microeconomics. So there's a lot of, misunderstanding around what exactly is the gig economy. And I think it's important that we define that to kind of move forward.
Absolutely. Now I have to ask you, I mean, you're a pastor, you've written mm-hmm. books about ministries. How did you get to the gig economy? I've got to know. I read, and we have spoken before, and I don't think that we talked about that, or if we did, it managed to mm-hmm. Slip away from me. But yeah, I read your bio. I read the information that you sent to me. I've read the book. I'm like, how did this happen? tell us, share a bit of that if you would.
Sure, sure. Yeah, it's my parents, so I'm Korean Canadian, and my parents immigrated to Canada in the 70s. And it's, I mean, they're entrepreneurs. I mean, serial entrepreneurs over and over and over again, starting up businesses and trying to just feed my three sisters and I, four kids. And it's interesting because my mom did Airbnb even before Airbnb was a thing. I mean, she had homestay international students living in her home, renting out our basement. And it was just incredible to see my parents thrive as self-employed workers who are getting paid for their time, their skills, their possessions, right, in regards to their house and also their expertise. So it was fascinating. As I was writing the book, I was like, oh, my goodness, this is what life was like. And then as I explored what my life was like in university and afterward while I was doing my master's and working, and even now with the writing and the consulting I do on the side and the multiple podcasts I have and the different things, I mean, I was like, okay, is this just me being bored? what is it that I am so attracted to this notion of the gig economy? But also, I was personally surprised when I came across the research how I've been a part of this pretty much my entire life.
You know, I have too, but I never knew what it was called. I figured right? It was just me wandering around going, oh, I can do that. Oh, I can do that better. And I do. So, yeah, we have, our minds are fascinating. I don't think that we were created, and we're getting away from this, that we were created to do one job, go to the railroad, get your pocket watch, sit on the porch, die. We weren't uh-huh. created to do that. Our brains simply don't work that way. I mean, there certainly was a time in the entire world, basically, but largely here in America where that was, you know, we were, you know, part of the people who went to work every day faithfully and then mm-hmm. retired. And
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
either their wives murdered them or they just faded away. Who knows what happened?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I mean, oftentimes when I counsel or when I'm talking to leaders, there's different moments throughout your life that are those defining moments that shape you toward one direction or another. And as I was just talking with you right now, I mean, I didn't remember this. Like it hasn't come to my mind. And it hasn't come up in any other interview that I've talked about until right now. But I remember in grade 8, I was ready to stop playing the trumpet in school. And I had two mouthpieces. And my friend, he was in the locker right next door to me. He was a part of the gig economy because he bought Pepsi and Coke and all these pop cans. And he would sell them. He would sell this soda out of his locker for a cheaper price than the vending machine. And I was just amazed at all this cash that he was carrying around. And then I was like, he liked trumpet more than I did. And I was going to finish in a couple months. And I had two mouthpieces. And he was going to continue on in the 9th grade. So I sold him my mouthpiece, my extra mouthpiece, because he had all of this extra cash. And literally, I was like, my goodness, I have resold or been able to just kind of earn some extra pocket cash, even to the fact where I went to my dad and I was like, hey, Dad, can I return all of these bottle cans? Because he owned a billiard hall at one time. I was like, can I return all these bottle cans? And he was like, yeah, sure, of course. And you can keep all the money. I was like, yes. And I mean, that's over $100 per trip for a high school student. Yeah, I mean, that was worth it.
And see, that's, I love that story. And you hadn't thought of that in a long time?
No, not at all.
It's funny how when you're having a conversation, something will pop into your head and go, oh, mm-hmm. there it is. It wasn't gone. Mm-hmm. I'd stored it too tightly. But, you know, mm-hmm. People listening are probably going, oh, I've done something like that. Oh, mm-hmm. I just watched my teenager do something like that. So that's what the gig economy is. The gig economy is fluid, no question about mm-hmm. it. But you know, if you're really paying attention, you can very definitely turn it into a full-time business, a full-time gig, if you will. You know, a full-time, maybe a side hustle is a big word that's coming up right now. Yet we're mm-hmm. all looking for ways to repurpose what we've got, what we know, share what we know. And there's no better time than now.
Yeah. And earlier on, you were like, okay, well, how does that relate to what you, you know, what your day job is as a pastor? And
I was
it really was. So, first and foremost, it was kind of my, the ethos or the culture of just what was, it really was normal for me growing up. But as defined the gig economy, and this is just a, just to have a handle on this, it really is, you know, if you're self-employed in a part-time or a full-time capacity, getting paid for your one of four things, time, skills, positions, or expertise, you are a part of the gig economy. So when I looked at the research and I dug deep into the research in the US and Canada, the UK and in Australia, those were the countries where I found quite a bit of research, and it wasn't just someone blogging about it. There's actually scientific research done on this. It was fascinating because most of these countries, about 30 to 40% of the workforce was a part of this. I mean, that's in America, that's 57 million people. And as I dug a little bit deeper into that, I was like, oh my goodness, okay, well, if 57 million people are a part of the gig economy and they're getting paid for their time, skills, possessions, or expertise in a part-time or full-time capacity, I was like, how many more, like, okay, if it's 35%, I'm sure the rest of the population is actually funding the gig economy. And that led me down a path to be like, okay, if it is this widespread, how is this actually affecting everyday life for me and also for those in my church? So that was that connection there.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, you know, I read your bio, I read the book, and I was like, I'm not following. How did he make this jump? So I'm always curious why people do the things they do, because that's what makes us all so fascinating, why we do the things we do. Not necessarily how. I mean, that's fascinating as well. But to me, the why is the thing that I'm always looking at. And, you know, what you said just now about the rest of us are funding it. Look, I'm part of the gig economy. I'm also a big funder of the gig economy. You know, I have a fabulous team. I do. I mean, I build websites. I do social media marketing. I'm a digital agency. Every one of my employees, you know, I'm using little quotes with that. They're not employees. They're consultants. Mm. They're contractors. They're part of the gig economy. So am I. And I love it.
Yeah. So you're a part of it. You have created a platform to help others be a part of it. And you're also,
right.
I mean, when's the last time you ordered in or even bought something off of Amazon? Right? I mean, that's the gig economy. You are funding someone else's position.
Oh, I was on Amazon 2 minutes before we jumped on. I was. I ordered a water fountain for a friend of mine. One of my cats has had multiple surgeries, and a friend of mine, God bless her, found out who my veterinarian was and called them and paid part of his bill because it's just been terrific, which I thought was so sweet. But that's not the true story. And I cried the whole, you know, the veterinary office, we all kind of got a little teary. I was, oh, but a week later, her cat comes up with what she thought was a urinary tract infection. I was like, oh my goodness. It wasn't. It was something far less. But so my cat went on to Amazon and ordered her cat a fountain so he'll drink more water.
That is incredible.
He's part of the gig economy too.
Oh, that's incredible, Denise. Yeah.
So his fountain is on its way with a gift card.
That's wonderful. And I mean, how did we do that as kids? I mean, you had to go yourself or catch a ride with someone to go to the hardware store or the pet store to buy something, and then you had to go deliver. I mean, you didn't pay someone to do that for you, yet you are likely funding a marketplace, an individual who has posted that on Amazon, right? Because not everything comes directly from Amazon. So someone is earning money off of that sale, and then someone is earning money as a part of the gig economy to package that and to ship it. Perhaps if they're using Amazon's fulfillment warehouse, maybe they're a full-time worker. They're probably a gig worker, and then someone else to then deliver it, right? I mean, it's crazy how widespread and honestly how the gig economy has just so rapidly increased without us really noticing about it.
Exactly. And, you know, now you said that you were thinking of something from the past, and I just did as well. Do you know who Larry Winget is?
Doesn't come to mind.
Okay, Larry Winget has written 6 New York Times best-selling books. He's known as the pit bull of personal development. He will tell you which way the corn grows. You know, you just don't ask him a question you don't want the answer to. And he's a friend of mine. He's been on this podcast multiple times. And one of the very first stories he told me, and I'm realizing now it was pure gig economy, was that he became a very well-known international speaker and author because his business went belly up overnight. He went from being quite a millionaire, you know, quite wealthy, to just going, I've got kids to feed. And this is not a man who was too proud to do not, you know, just he went to his neighbors and he said, look, my business is dead. It died overnight. I'll mow your grass. And he did.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's gig economy, right? You do what you must do.
It is. And it's interesting when we look at, okay, if this is the new normal, how do we function around this? And Christina and I, we have 3 kids, a 10-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 5-year-old. And we're intentionally on the parenting side as well, trying to raise our kids to have multiple skills. So they have these skills, these expertises, this time and these possessions to be able to have multiple options as they grow. So they've made things and talked about, they have a business and entrepreneur book. And they have multiple business plans that they're ready. I mean, even to the point where when we were living in Tennessee, in our town, just outside of Nashville, there was a parade. There was a parade that we would always do. And there'd be these people walking around selling candy cane, not candy cane, floss, the candy floss and cotton candy, sorry. And they were like, oh, we should do that. And they looked online and they did the business plan. And I mean, it's incredible that with this being the new normal, how this can actually be not only as adults, very fulfilling in multiple ways, but also for kids, how this can be a part of their development.
Oh, no kidding. I mean, as kids, who didn't have a lemonade stand?
Mm-hmm.
We were, you know, arguing with the kids down the street. I was here first. No, you weren't. Yes, I was.
Yeah, that's right.
It can get ugly quick. You know, we're talking about the gig economy, which is important. And I, you know, talking about supporting the gig economy, you know, I always need somebody to help with the yards, you know, to clean the fence rows, to cut down tree branches, to wash the house, wash the concrete. And I've got all that going on right now. But I did that going to, what is it called? The app Nextdoor.
Yeah.
Where I live, it's oil field. Everybody is either working in a hospital because we have a lot of medical, or an oil field company, and they tanked. I mean, you talk about in a world of hurt. So I deliberately went into this what's next door thing, which I had ignored for many, many years. And I started hiring people to come, not cut the grass. My yard guy does that, but to do a lot of different things. And it felt like that was the right thing to do. I couldn't pay them a whole heck of a lot, but it gave them lunch money. It gave them gas money. And it helped them keep their pride. They were doing something. One of the guys, I find this very interesting, he realizes that he cannot depend on the oil company. I mean, he just can't. They're going to come and go. So he's now looking to start his own business, and he's asking me how to do it. I'm happy to help. So there's different ways you can do this.
Yeah, and what's so wonderful about that, Denise, is you're being a loving neighbor, right? A loving neighbor that I think, especially during this pandemic, we need to neighbor with one another, not necessarily rely on whatever the programs are out there or others. It really is. We need to help one another. We really do need to love one another and be neighbors to one another. But on top of that, Denise, like what you're doing there is not only are you providing jobs and creating jobs, but the beauty of the gig economy is this is actually, I mean, it's skill development. It really is skill development for those in and around you. But it's not only skill development, it's wise stewardship of our time. So for me, I need to recognize, okay, if I'm going to pay someone $25 to mow my lawn, okay, how long would it take me to mow my lawn? Well, it's going to take an hour. Well, okay, well, what else can I do with that hour that would actually cost more or bring in more money? That is, you know, so there's that cost benefit that we need to do. And I've recognized that, okay, instead of doing that, it's actually better that I focus in on my podcast or in my writing or some of my other side hustles, because I'll make more than $25 an hour in light of that.
That's exactly right. And I learned that way early on when I was, you know, hiring people to be part of my team. And I've got to tell you, some of these guys, I've never met them. You know, some are in Canada, some are here. They're all over the country, all over North America. Some of them have been with me a decade or better. So it works. You know, they have their own thing. A lot of them have their own small companies or their own small industries that they work in, but doing that side hustle and doing it well. And I pay them well enough, and I appreciate them a lot that they stick with me. And because this is an important thing, and I say this a lot, you know, I'm a WordPress developer. I dream in short codes. Sometimes it's sad.
That's awesome.
I'm a nerd in stilettos. I admit it. But the thing is, I will do my best to find. And when I ask somebody on my team to do something, I'm not asking them to do something I don't already know how to do. I can do it myself. That's why I'm able to, confer with them and say, this is what I need you to do. But I really make it a point to find people who are better at this than I am. Because they get in quicker, faster, easier. They can make great suggestions. It works.
Yeah. And instead of you for quote unquote free trying to do something that might have taken you 3 hours, you pay someone who can do it in 30 minutes. And
exactly.
It's not quote unquote free. I mean, it is because you're not paying anyone, but it was your time, right? It was your time that you could have used to build your business, to grow your business, and to really do the things that only you could do.
That's exactly right. And when you're, you know, kind of a control freak, I'm a control freak. Oh, what the heck? I am a control freak. That's hard to give up. It really is.
Mm.
But once you learn the dynamics of it and the money of it and the time of it, okay, I got this.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Okay, so let's talk about, go back to your kids. So I really want to know how they created this plan. I mean, did they write it down? Did they have a document? How did that look?
So my wife bought them this. It's kind of like a build your own business book. So there's different resources out there for children, because actually entrepreneurism is such a life skill that I think whether you have a traditional 9-to-5 job or not, learning the skills of being an entrepreneur is so important. So even for my kids, it really is me saying, okay, well, that's great that you know that, but how are you going to use it? Or, hey, it's great that you wrote this book report, but maybe more than a book report, why don't you write a marketing pitch? So it's always trying to expand their mind and help them understand, hey, it's not what you're doing is not actually just about what you're doing. There's a lot of skills and that you can grow and use future forward in light of what you're doing. And I think this really came out of my childhood where I wanted to do well in school. I wanted to please my parents. I wanted to please my teachers, but I only thought that there were a finite number of jobs in the world and the finite number of jobs that you had to go to university for, and you had to go to law school or medical school or become an engineer. And it was just, you know, on my two hands, these are the only categories and jobs that there are. But with the gig economy just rapidly increasing, that really isn't the case. So as parents, we're saying, okay, yeah, here's a great book that's going to walk you through. It really was kind of like a build your own business template sort of book, but it goes beyond that, because I really do believe it's a life skill oriented approach to parenting.
Do me a favor, when we're done, send me a link to that book. I would love to share that.
Sure.
Oh, great.
For sure.
Okay, so I mean, I can think of a lot of people who can share that with their children, particularly now when, you know, you're trying to find a way to keep your kids engaged and entertained and you know, getting healthier by being outside riding, you know, riding your bikes. I'm noticing now in my little neighborhood, which is quite small, that there's kids in this neighborhood. I didn't know that. I mean, I kind of did. There's school buses that used to show up in the mornings, but now, you know, they've kind of sorted out what time they're going to be racing in circles in front of my house, which is kind of fun. You know, I go out there and watch them because they are having so much joyful play out there. And I'm not really one for kids. I don't particularly enjoy them very much, but then I'm an introvert, so I don't enjoy most people, to be honest.
Oh, I can't believe that. No.
Oh, I'm a total introvert. In fact, recently, because I've been out in the yard and out, you know, meeting with these people that are coming to work on the house, I've had people come by and go, I didn't know anybody lived in that house. I was like, hi. They never see me. I drive into the garage, I drive out of the garage. That's it.
Yeah.
But it's been kind of interesting. But things are changing. And I don't know about you, and this really doesn't have to do with the gig economy, but more about attitude. I'm finding that people are a lot friendlier, a lot more, you know, liable to stop walking their dog and say, hey, how's it going? You know, how are you? Oh, I like your dog. Your dog's pretty, you know, that kind of thing. And my dog is pretty, by the way. She's beautiful.
Yeah, there's the lingering that seems to be happening. Because and one of the chapters in the book, I talk about you are who you know, and that it's interesting because I wrote the book a couple of years ago. I finished it over a year ago, and there's the whole publishing process that takes place, and it takes a little bit of time to then get it to print and do the marketing and all that stuff, right? But when I finished it, it was pre-pandemic, and there's still that sense of, I mean, there's a classic book called Bowling Alone. Right. But I think it's Robert Putnam. And there's this idea of, OK, our culture has really moved along this trajectory of isolation and not, you know, and kind of fake community or digital, quote unquote, community. And there's this isolation that was continuing to increase. Now, with the pandemic, I'm not saying that has solved. It's actually probably further enhanced that sense of isolation that we have. However, I don't think anyone is going to deny the importance of relationships and the importance of community, because it's one thing for us to choose not to, and it's another thing to have that choice taken away from us. And I think this pandemic has taken the choice away from us, and we're like, oh, actually, I miss that. Oh, actually, I miss going to the grocery store and not having to ask like the person next to me has the plague and I have to avoid them. And I miss these casual, you know, I miss a casual hug from a friend saying hi. And there's this aspect where it's been taken away from us. So it's interesting how that has now come out. And I've noticed the same thing in my neighborhood. People are lingering more. And I'm like, okay,
here too.
Usually my conversation with my neighbor might be 5 minutes. It's been 30 minutes. We're still talking and I have to go make dinner or I have to go do this, but I don't necessarily want to stop because it's been so long since I've talked to my neighbors.
And that's the same thing here. I haven't spoken with my next door neighbor in years. I mean, we wave at each other and sometimes, oh geez, one time I actually tried to mow my own lawn. I shouldn't do things like that. It's very humid here. It's very hot here. I don't cope well with either of those things, and I managed to take my little tiny electric lawnmower and run it underneath my pecan trees, which kind of draped down, and I got a branch in my eye, and I said some really bad words really loudly.
No.
Yeah, and then I remembered to, you know, take the button off and turn off my little machine, and I heard silence, because I knew my neighbor had been mowing his grass too, and all of a sudden I heard this little voice like, are you okay? No. So I had to go over to the fence and say, I am so sorry. He said, don't worry about it. I learned some new words because I made them up as I went. I was really mad. So we don't talk either. I mean, you know, we just kind of, hey, how are you doing? But again, you know, during this last round of people, at one point I had 5 or 6 people in my yard working on the house. Somebody was on the roof. I needed new roof. All kinds of people just swarming all over the place. It turned to us, I'm honestly surprised nobody broke out a barbecue pit. It was a little party. You know, I enjoyed it, and I'm not one to hang around outside with my neighbors. I never have done. I actually really enjoyed it. So that was an eye opener for me.
Yeah, that's huge because I think in our culture, it's so easy to think about everything as a transaction. And particularly with the gig economy, I mean, it is kind of a quote unquote human transaction where someone is being paid for their possessions or their expertise or that, you know, as consultants or their for their time or their skills. So it seems very much our culture has definitely gone toward the sense of, okay, utilitarian, this is a utilitarian transaction. But I think with so many choices having been taken away from us because of the pandemic, I think our eyes are beginning to open, and I'm so grateful for that. I think the gig economy is actually going to serve to increase and be even more accelerated. In Alberta, where I live right now, I mean, same with you. Our economy is so driven by oil, and there's that sense of, okay, do I want my livelihood to depend fully on someone else's decision working for them? Or do I want to start this side hustle so I can build my own business and I can put away reserves and I can make the decisions that's not just what's best for the company, but what's best for me and my family and those that I care for as well.
Exactly. And I'm seeing that with this young man who has been working in my yards. I mean, I'll get texts from him. It's like, okay, my buddy and I are thinking about this. What do you think? And I'll have to stop and think about it because I don't work for other people. I mean, I have clients, but I don't have a job that I have to show up to and, you know, take care of that. It's a mindset that I don't really understand, to be honest. I never did.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm an introvert. I don't play well with others. I run with scissors. You don't want me in your office. It's best that I'm off all by myself. So I've created this lifestyle that works. But, you know, he'll come up with some really terrific ideas. And then other times I'm thinking, you know, you're getting ahead of yourself. I want to send that book that you're talking about to him. Because it sounds to me like it may not just be for children, that it will be help people who have never been a solopreneur or an entrepreneur go, oh, okay, well, let me think about this.
Yeah. Now, okay, Denise, you know, it's interesting. In my previous job in Nashville, I was one of the roles that I had was I was a product manager, so certified product manager. And it's interesting because as I did this, and it was a multi-million dollar software project that I was overseeing. And once again, I didn't necessarily have, I'm not a coder in any way, but as a leader and as a coach, the product management side made sense. And I love technology in that way. So it was interesting as I dug deeper into it, just the whole difference between waterfall versus an agile method for software development and how that actually quite digs into and really in starting your own business and being a developer for a business or an entrepreneur, solopreneur, just how important and how insightful that agile development methodology is for entrepreneurs.
And that makes sense to me because I am a nerd, so I understood what you said. It's kind of sad.
Yeah, people are like, waterfall?
Agile? Yeah. I get it. I don't want to get too far off from, because we're having a really nice time here, and thank you so much because I'm finding this absolutely fascinating. But I think we've already talked about the rapid growth of the gig economy. What are the unintended consequences of the gig economy? Do you think some people will simply never go back to their old jobs? Do you think that they'll just run full bore into it? Or do you think a lot more people will say, look, I know how to knit. I can teach people how to knit or crochet. My grandma tried to teach me how to crochet. My sweet grandma stabbed me with a crochet needle. It wasn't nice. I couldn't do it. And she was so sweet. But, you know, there's so many different things that we as humans know. And that we can now dig into and go, hey, you know, do you want to learn to speak French? I can help you with that. I'm a native, you know, French speaker. I mean, there's so many things that we can do and share.
Yeah, so we need to think first and foremost, gig economy is you're getting paid for your time, your skills, your possessions, or your expertise. So on the possession side, I mean, there's, I'm sure every single one of your listeners can grab things from their home, put it up on Facebook Marketplace or eBay or Craigslist, and make quite a bit of money off of that. Maybe it's paintings that aren't up anymore, or photos, or just anything. I'm sure there's at least $1,000 worth of unused things in your house that you could probably sell and make money off of. So that's the possessions piece of things. But you're right. I mean, there are skills that we have, and we can get paid for those, and also our time and our expertise. So Denise, in regards to the unintended consequences, I think we need to think about it on two sides. On the one side, there's what is this doing to our souls and to our emotional and spiritual well-being, but also I think it's a matter of wisdom to say, okay, when do I jump 2 feet into the gig economy, and when should I, how long should it be a side hustle?
Oh, good question. So what's the answer? I mean, there is no answer. These are things that we have to ask ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
In regards to the latter, that sense of how long do I pursue this side hustle for, there is that breaking point to say, okay, if you have a regular W-2 job, right, and you're getting, you have a salary, or you kind of, you're depending on someone else for that, and you're not necessarily self-employed, you have this passion project that you have, or I mean, it's actually, I don't necessarily like using this as an example, but there are these guys in Tennessee, when the pandemic early hit, they went and got the stores with all the cleaning supplies like Clorox, wipes.
Oh, we all know who they are.
Sanitizer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Now, yeah. What's interesting is this wasn't their first rodeo. Yeah. But it wasn't their first rodeo. I mean, they were living off of reselling things on Amazon, buying and reselling. They even made over $100,000 just in this. Now, they had to give away all their supplies after because Amazon shut them down. But reselling is a thing. It really is a thing. I mean, I even know others in Nashville, where I was, like in the town that I was before, where literally they would do two things. This couple would only do two things for the entire year. They would sell fireworks close to July 4th weekend, and then
we have
they
that
would,
here.
Yeah, and then they would do consignment, and they would host this huge consignment for people to consign clothes. Literally, two things made them their entire salary for the year, and eat plus even more. So when we think about it from that perspective, it's like, okay, let's say you have a passion project. Let's say you want to. I mean, I have friends who actually signed up for a bulk fireworks account. Because I mean, fireworks, it's crazy, right? In the US, where literally they mark them up so much. And he bought a ton and started selling them because, hey, it's a business. You can do this. So there is a sense of, hey, when you, if your passion project is actually bringing in enough and you have saved 3 to 6 months, maybe even more of a safety nest in case, because as an entrepreneur, it's either feast or famine often. So make sure you have that safety net put aside and saved away. And when you have that and you're beginning to get a lot of consistency in terms of revenue and income, then I believe you can take that step away from your full-time job and go 2 full feet into this. So that's that first side. The other side is, I mean, there's so many emotional and psychological and spiritual unintended consequences of the gig economy too.
Well, let's talk about those. I am an entrepreneur at heart. I think I was born that way. I was making Halloween costumes in my mom's garage when I was a kid.
That's awesome.
Trying them off, making my siblings, you know, stand there and let me pin them on them, and then selling them to the neighbors. I can't sew a stitch, but I can design like a crazy person. So I would have my sisters. So I've always wanted to find a way to do something my own way. I've never liked having to go do what I'm told. I think you've probably figured that out. I don't do well with that. But not everybody is a solopreneur or entrepreneur, but I firmly believe that it can be taught, that you can learn it. So let's talk about that a bit. I mean, your kids are being taught this, which I think is phenomenal. Is there anything that you think people should need to know? Like, look, I do want to become part of the gig economy. Now I need to put my thinking cap on and figure out what it is that I can either sell. Gee, I've got an entire attic full of stuff. Okay, let me go look there. What can I do? What can I offer? Should I, you know, become an Uber Eats driver? There are so many different things that are being offered right now. What should people do? Let's give them a blank piece of paper and tell them to start writing down what I do, what I have, what I, you know, the things that you've laid out.
Yeah, it's okay. So it's really important because the allure of the gig economy is a life of freedom and flexibility.
Oh, good luck with that.
But that's the allure. I'm only kind of kidding.
Yeah.
That's the allure, right, Denise? I mean, it's a sense of, oh, you're your own boss. That's freedom. You can set your own time, your schedule. Well, that's flexibility. There's a sense of, oh, you know, if I want to go on a vacation, well, I'm just going to hustle a little bit more. I'm going to put in a few more hours because I can control that. I don't need to beg for another shift, or I don't need to find another job and do the training and do the rigmarole and jumping through the ropes. I don't need to do that. I am my own boss. And that is honestly the allure of the gig economy, this life of ultimate freedom and flexibility, or to put it another way, a life of control. And that is actually how the gig economy has grown so much and why us as humans so desire it, because we all desire freedom. We desire flexibility. That's kind of deep within us. So that's really, honestly, Denise, that is the thing that we need to be fully aware of, that this is underneath the surface with us doing all that, that that's actually what we are longing for. Yet as we are longing for that, as I outline in the book, there are actually seven lies, to be more specific, that end up, I guess, manifesting themselves when we pursue this life of freedom and flexibility with our whole hearts.
Exactly. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I started my business because I needed to be in control. No question. No question at all. You know, it's part of who I am. It's part of, you know, me being a control freak, a recovering control freak. I just lied to you, but that's okay. You didn't believe it anyway. But I do try. But let's talk about those lies. And they, you know, you've got seven of them. So let's talk about those. Run them down for me, if you would.
Yeah. So just super quickly, you are what you do. You are what you experience. You are who you know. You are what you know. You are what you own, you are who you raise, and you are your past. So these seven in specific have risen to the surface. They're an outflow of that notion of freedom and flexibility, but it's all kind of risen to the surface because of the gig economy.
Okay, do you have any? My mind just went blank because I started writing them down, even though I've read the book. So do you have any, you know, maybe a case study that you can share where one or more of these really had somebody going, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. How do I get out of this mess?
Yeah. I mean, it's the title of the book is probably the best example. You are what you do. And I mean, for us in the West and in North America in particular, I mean, as children, what do you ask children? What do you want to be?
Who you
want to
be when
you
grow
up?
Right.
Yeah, we don't ask them what they want to do. It's what they want to be. And they answer with what they do. So from childhood, we're convinced that this is the way to see ourselves. As adults, we're asked what we do for work. At the end of our lives, on our tombstone, we're measured by what we've done. So there's a sense where it's so easy to identify ourselves fully on this notion that we are what we do. And is it kind of an outright lie? No. I mean, a lot of who I am and how I see myself is shaped by what I do. But the problem is when we build our lives completely off of that, what happens when you can't do what you are doing and you are in a severe accident and that leaves you unable to do the work that you had done before? Or if you lose your job and or you mess up and you can't do that and you have to start from scratch, that those are the moments where most of us actually go through an identity crisis, because we're like, well, I can't do what I've been doing. I can't do what I went to school for. I can't do what I have skills for. And then what is my life for? And there's that crisis of identity that happens.
And we're seeing that a lot now.
Yes. With all the unemployment.
It's horrible. Yeah. How do you help people who are saying exactly what you just said? Yeah, I can't go to work, or they cut my hours, or okay, my young man just texted me yesterday, said, okay, they put us back to full time, but they cut us 30% in terms of money. Oh, geez. You know,
yeah.
He's glad to have his job, but he's also seriously looking at side hustles now. He doesn't want to be at the mercy of his employers, even though his employers are in a very rough spot themselves.
Yeah.
So how do you talk with people right now and say, listen, this is not the best time to panic. This is the best time to dig into yourself and see what you're really made of and what you bring to the table.
Yes. Yes. So there's definitely the sense of, okay, you don't have to sit on your couch and try to wait for unemployment checks and just kind of feel, do the whole woe is me, my whole life is ending. Now, having said that, there is definitely a sense where we do, and a time where we do need to grieve, and to bury those emotions without acknowledging them is going to actually do more long-term harm, which is the last lie of the book, which is you are your past. And we actually end up so shoving our emotions and such down the hole that it comes up in other ways. So there is that sense where we do need to grieve, and we need to come to terms with how we are feeling and why we're feeling what we're feeling. But once we move through that and move beyond that, there's that sense of, okay, now what can I do? And from a primal sense, there's that sense of, okay, how do I just get food on the table? But if we don't assess these lies, for example, the one that you are what you do and what they do underneath the surface, then even our side hustle can end up doing the same thing. So there are three things that I'd love for your listeners to understand. When our being is defined by our doing, right? And that's the interesting thing, right? We're called human beings. We're not called human doings yet. we base our life on what we do. So when we believe this lie that we are what we do, and this becomes the primary lens in which we see ourselves and measure success, three things happen. We feel this pressure to do more, get more, have more, and be more. The problem is it's a never-ending cycle, right? It's kind of, Denise, it's kind of like laundry. It never ends. You think you finished, and then all of a sudden you turn around and you're like, what? I thought I just did the laundry. I thought I just folded it. And there's always the pressure never lets up. Platform is another piece where, as we believe this lie that we are what we do, there's a sense where we need to build this platform bigger and bigger and bigger, which actually leads to this sense of a compartmentalized life of private and public. And then lastly, there's that sense where there's this notion to pretend, the whole fake it till you make it. And man, I'm not there yet, but I'm going to pretend, because if I pretend that I've got it, and I base my life around this idea of doing and maybe one thing I did instead of all the things and such, and we base our entire lives on that, so these are actually three ways that this lie manifests itself to the surface, which literally, I mean, you just think about it, take a step back, and you're like, okay, a life of pretending, a life of building your platform where there's such compartmentalization that happens, and a life where I feel this unending pressure, that doesn't really sound like a good life, does it?
No, it doesn't. But I will say that I have a tendency, a habit, if you will, of determining what my next steps are going to be and then envisioning it. And then I put myself right smack in the vision. It works.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not pretending anything. I'm actually projecting what I'm going to do. Okay, so let's go to the next big question, because we're talking about, you know, how this affects people as individuals, but the truth is it affects your wife, your husband, your children, how you work, you know, how you drive. I mean, I don't notice people flipping each other off as badly anymore. So And I don't drive a whole lot because, you know, I stay put for the most part. But, you know, every once in a while you'll get somebody who's just going to be a jerk behind the wheel.
That's right.
I'm not even noticing them. So are people calming down? Is this kind of forced introspection helping people or hurting them?
Yeah, there's definitely a wrestle right now in our society. There's the wrestle of, okay, maybe because, I mean, for the last 30 years, even just, okay, beyond the 30 years, you even just look at the last 5-10 years of the stock market and how it's just skyrocketed over years. I mean, I've in this season, I had some extra money put aside in savings, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go buy airline stock right now, and I'm going to go buy this Disney stock, and I'm going to do it because they are at the levels they were 5 to 8 years ago. And I know people are going to travel again, and people are going to, I mean, Disney's going to still rule the day after all this is said and done. So there's this sense where we are coming to terms with our humanity. We are coming to terms with the sense of, okay, maybe life isn't always up and to the right. And maybe, yeah, there is going to be an economic depression, or maybe things aren't going to just be on the bright side. So there is this sense, Denise, I believe, where I love how you said it, there is a forced introspection where we need to really assess, okay, what am I building my life upon? Am I building my life upon my job and my title? Am I building my life upon everything, all my vacations and my experiences? Am I building my life upon the things that I know or who I know? Do I find myself dropping names at parties because of how it makes me feel and who I've connected with? Do I flash my watch or my Tesla car? I don't have a Tesla car, but you know, my Tesla or the things.
I don't know anybody who does.
Right. I mean, how are we building our lives? And what I'm grateful for in the midst of all the job loss and everything that is going on, I'm actually grateful that this is giving us an opportunity to pause, and it's giving us an opportunity to assess, okay, spiritually, emotionally, how am I feeling? Spiritually, what am I building my life upon? How is my soul doing? Is my soul empty? What is my soul being fed by? And we are being forced to ask these questions because life is not just about money. It's not just about work. It's not just about the stuff we get or anything like that. Life is not these seven lives. It's so much deeper than that.
I agree with you. And what I'm finding is that because of this forced introspection, I'll be very frank with you, it has not harmed my business at all. In fact, I'm busier than I ever have been, which is a good thing. It's kind of crazy. But here's the thing. I look at other people, and I'm actually conversing more with people than I have been known to do in the past. I'm actually seeking people out to have conversations with them. That's not normally my thing. You know, I live in my head. I read a lot. I'm always building something. My head is it's a scary place. It really is. You don't want to go poke around in there. I'm always thinking. I don't even sleep very well because my brain wakes me up and goes, oh, go do this, and I go do that.
Yeah.
It works for me. But I'm finding, because of what I'm watching other people do and how they're responding, how they're behaving, how they're thriving, how they're moving forward or not, that I'm a lot more interested in actual people than I have been in a long time. And I'm grateful for that, because I realized that I got very selfish with my time. Very. And that wasn't a good thing.
And I love that. And for your listeners, I mean, I know it's, especially today, it's okay, well, I need to keep on moving because I need to make ends meet. And not everyone, I mean, who doesn't need a website right now, right, Denise? And who doesn't need to increase their marketing and social media presence and online? And there's all that aspect of it. But I think for us to waste this quarantine, right, there should be this hashtag, you know, hashtag don't waste your quarantine. And really, we shouldn't waste this time, because life is going to pick up again. We're going to be able to go to the barber and get a haircut. We're going to be able to go on vacation, and the borders are going to open up, and we're going to go back to Disneyland. Or, I mean, there's all the sense where life is going to go back to normal. And I do deeply pray that we don't waste this pandemic, and we recognize, okay, maybe this is the opportunity, Denise, for us to put the press the reset button, for us to press the reset button and be like, okay, let me just pause and let me assess, is the life that I was living, is it actually leading to the life that I want? Or is it actually filled with these unintended consequences, living the rat race, and it actually leads to a life that I don't actually want anything to do with? And this is what the pandemic gives us an opportunity to do at the moment.
Very much so. And are you finding that relationships are either getting better with work? Because let's face it, a lot of families, this is just my observation, but a lot of families don't really spend a whole heck of a lot of time together. And I think, yeah, and I'm kind of joking here, but I'm kind of thinking that a lot of parents are finding out that their little darlings are anything but, and why their teachers are always saying, would you stop this kid from bullying the other kids, if you wouldn't mind. But I'm wondering how this is really affecting families, and because there's that enforced, we have to be together, which is, I hate to even say it, we have to be together. What's wrong with being together? But, yeah. I mean, is it helping people, or is it, I don't even know how to put this. Hitting that pause button and saying, hey, I recognize you. You're number two, right? You're the second son, right? Yeah. What's your name again? That kind of thing.
What this is doing to us is it's taking the veneer off, stripping it away, and showing us what our relationships are made of. And
That's what I was trying to say. I couldn't form it. Thank you.
And for those families who, yes, may have been busier than normal because they're keeping up with the Joneses and going to music and sports and this, that, and the other. And yes, they were busy, yet the relationships were healthy. Those are the families that are saying, well, actually, it's nice to slow down and it's fun. I mean, yesterday after dinner, the kids and I our whole family, my wife and our kids, we played a few card games. We played Uno, right? We played Slamwich, which was a brand
Clue.
New game for us.
You have to have Clue.
And it was, love Clue. And it was so fun to be together. And my wife and I have a marriage and parenting podcast called the In Between Podcast, like my last name, In Between. But we do that, and we don't have everything together, obviously, but we do have a healthy relationship with each other and with our kids, and we're loving this time. But I also know that during seasons of unemployment and hardships like we are in right now, alcohol consumption goes up, abuse goes up, and there's a lot. Yes, there's a lot of that goes up, and it's partly because you're now forced together. And underneath the surface, there's stuff that you haven't dealt with. Your past as an adult, and also your past together with your children and your family and others around you. So don't waste your quarantine. Take the moment, and especially the last chapter of the book, where don't take the moment to assess the ways that you have hurt others and the way that others have hurt you. And may this be a time of healing as well.
Exactly. And right now, there are so many free, many companies, Audible has made a lot of their, for children, as long as school is out, they've made a lot of their books available for kids.
That's right.
Heck with that. I'm listening to them. I've been listening to the first Harry Potter book that is narrated by Stephen Fry, who was born to read that book. There are so many different things that you can, go get it. If your kids like Harry Potter, Stephen Fry actually sounds like Hagrid at some point.
Oh my gosh.
That's
cool. Yeah.
It's amazing.
They're reading them right now. So I didn't realize the Audible side of things.
I'll send you the link. They would love it. But there are so many companies and so many small businesses who are making things available for free because they want to be helpful. If you're having trouble, you know, finding the gig economy, we've got your book. If you're having trouble just dealing with your emotional IQ right now, there's a lot of information out there. Get online and find what you can find that will help you travel through all of this. Don't just sit and wait for your unemployment. That just makes me go, bleh. I hate that.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. Don't waste this. Listen, we are running out of time. This has been a fantastic conversation, and thank you so much. Where can people find you?
Yeah, so super simple, just my name, Daniel M. So IM is my last name, DanielM.com. Easiest way to see what I've written, and I write regularly there as well. I actually wrote an article yesterday on this notion of how our brains react in crisis. So there's that there, and on social media, it's Daniel Sanggi, so S-A-N-G-I. That's my Korean name, so that's my handle on all the platforms, social media.
Perfect. Daniel, thank you so much. I have thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you today, and I love your book, and I hope people will grab it and really take it to heart. So thank you for all of the wonderful tips and advice that you've shared with our audience. And before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us on iTunes and really anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for your partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Daniel, thank you.
Thanks, Denise.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.